Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
It's time to grow with the SEO queen. Get visibility like never before. Your traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow with the SEO queen. Receive the perfect leads like never before. No traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow.
Welcome to the SEO Queen Tech Show, a podcast to help you get more credibility, visibility, and profitability through inspiration, technology, and marketing insight. This podcast is for professionals and entrepreneurs who are looking to get more customers, clients, and patients. We're broadcast on Bashani Radio, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. Bashani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. You could listen to the SEO Queen Tech Show on any mobile phone or tablet device. Also, as a thank you gift for listening to the SEO Queen Tech Show, you can go to SEOQueen.com and book a complimentary strategy session. Just go to SEOQueen.com and book a Reach More Clients Power Session. So today's guest is an academic, researcher, an expert. He earned his master's degree in 1995, a PhD in 2003 in history with a focus on Africa from Indiana University. He was an Eli Lilly Teaching Fellow, a Jay Williams Fulbright Fellow, and he has been in academia and in the digital marketing space for many, many years. He is an AI expert, my friend, none other than Dr. John Aiden. Welcome. How are you today?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Okay, awesome, awesome. So we just had the Reach More Clients Power Conference, and your presentation definitely was a hit. And you spoke about AI or artificial intelligence. So what do you think is important for business owners to really understand about AI today?
I think that AI in particular is changing the business landscape so rapidly that business owners can't afford to sit out on the sidelines and wait to see what happens. I mean, we're already through the fourth and fifth iterations of ChatGPT, which was before the launch of Meta's Threads, which is a competitor product to Twitter, now X, right? Everything's changing, right?
Right.
The last conversation we had, but, you know, ChatGPT before the announcement of Threads was the fastest app to 100 million users. And some of that user base has tapered off, but I think it's important to keep in mind that, like, you know, our artificial intelligence platforms are changing so quickly. They're changing faster than the regulatory environment. Mm-hmm. At the conference, we talked a little bit about how there are lawsuits moving through various courts to address the use of AI and how AI has managed to train itself on the open web. And so people who have content archives are now looking to receive some remuneration, some payback for having helped to train AI. So, you know, but the courts are always a lagging indicator. They're a following indicator. What's happening on the front end is that, you know, small business owners really need to be engaged. And it's tough because at the conference, we talked about how, you know, many small business owners have so many competing pressures that, you know, who has time to learn about AI is a position that some small business owners have taken. The challenge, though, is that a lot of business owners see the value added in using this platform. So that's been important. And if you sit around and wait, the changes will be so dramatic that the learning curve will be that much steeper when you do start. So those are all, you know, reasons to pay attention to AI now, as opposed to waiting to get involved. A lot of the small business owners waited to get on TikTok, waited to get on YouTube. It's this, you know, traditional Well, there's an adoption curve that we find on the internet that shows us like what percentage of people are early adopters versus the people that wait until the last minute to embrace a technology. So there's some opportunity costs involved in getting in on AI. And a lot of the platforms are extremely low cost right now, but it doesn't mean they're going to stay that way. That's another incentive to get in on the ground floor, too.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, one of the things you shared during the conference was that companies that are implementing AI are finding their revenue increase 20% with the implementation. Can you talk elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yeah, of the respondents to a major Forbes survey of small business owners about AI, they found that, they exactly as you stated, they found a 20% increase minimum in revenue when they incorporated AI. And there's a debate emerging about whether companies should retain their employees and train them on AI so that they increase the productivity within the business, or whether they should just let people go and, figure it out themselves. And so there's always a balance.
Yeah, I think the strike that's happening right now, the writer's strike started first, and then the actors have joined in. And I think AI is right at the center of this the strike. So what can you share with the listeners about that?
Yes. So the writer's strike, which is now also an actor strike, is this important moment in Hollywood within the studio system. And the studio executives they already have a contract that allows them to take the likeness of an actor and repurpose it for the promotion of a film, for instance. And that changes the game with AI because they could ideally use an actor's likeness in a, say, a Sprite commercial and not compensate the actor for that. So the actors are upset, and in some respects, like, this is hindsight 2020 and not blaming the victim, but right when the streaming services started, the actors probably should have considered taking a strong stand. But nobody knew what the streaming service business model was going to look like. So, you know, the actors waited for the next negotiation window to open. And I'm not an attorney, so I don't know whether or not they could have actually taken action or not. But now that we're here, you know, the business models for the studios have changed. And the studios made a number of decisions that have impacted the way they generate revenue. They separated content from production so that they could compartmentalize and squeeze as much revenue as possible out of it. For writers, this has meant instead of keeping a full-time writing staff from pre-production through post-production and release, now the studios have pop-up writers' rooms. When they run into a problem with a character in a series that's streamed, for instance, on Netflix, they'll just bring in a day rate pop-up writer to solve the problem. And they'll pay that person one time. There's no residuals. And then that person takes off and, waits for the next phone to ring for the next gig. That's different than the way Hollywood has traditionally been structured. And the question for these actors and writers is, will the Hollywood studios use AI to start solving these problems in scripts? Like, there are so many scripts that have been written. And the assumption is because the studios have all these scripts and many of them are digitized, almost all of them are digitized. Ideally, they can feed these into AI and AI can start saying, okay, in detective shows, this is the way a certain problem is solved when a main character and a criminal have a conflict. And then AI can write the answer without using an actual writer. So now writers aren't actually needed to write shows. That's the fear. Right. It works differently in animation than it does in live action, but AI is a transformational tool, and it's the reason why the studio executives don't want to settle, because they see the long-term future. Right now, that's on the content side. On the production side, well, the directors and producers already signed their deal with the studios maybe 2-3 months ago, and they did it sort of even though everyone in the industry realized a strike was coming from the writers and then the actors. The actors have elected to support the writers, right? So they're all on strike. Right. You know, maybe the producers and the directors probably should have waited. And now people are saying the producers, for all the millions of dollars they make, they're saying that the producers have undervalued their own services. But they've signed a deal now. They got to live with it.
Yeah, so, I feel like we're at a watershed moment in technology where the decisions that are made today are either going to continue to bolster the economic footing of people, or it's going to put everybody in the poorhouse and potentially wipe out entire industries.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, there are cancer detecting AI that are 95% accurate, and they have to be signed off on by a real physical doctor or a human being. But I mean, we've never seen predictive rates like this. And so the question becomes, what is the impact going to be? And especially in white collar industries, right? It's not so much in low cost industries, although there's a different type like of AI. Automation is more of a threat to those people's jobs.
Right.
I mean, you know, we already have 3D printing, you know, devices that can build homes or the wings of airplanes, you know, completely on autopilot or almost completely on autopilot in a way that has never been possible before. So, you know, those are threats to, say, working class jobs, but most of the threat from AI is white collar jobs. So all of us, if we have businesses, we're in white collar, many of us, not all, but some of us are in service industries. But even within the service industries, there's a number of white collar jobs that at some point might be partly or, you know, in a majority way replaceable by AI. So it's causing a lot of concern among people. I mean, I think there is a Gartner study that showed the expectation is 400 million jobs will be eliminated by AI and 97 million jobs will be created. So right there, you got a $300 million deficit, million job deficit.
Yeah.
Right. So now that's worldwide and it's early days. We don't really fully know what all the implications are going to be.
Yeah, I think, you know, AI is really impacting a lot of industries. For instance, the publishing industry is, I've been reading that they want billions from these tech companies because they feel that they have used their content to train these AI models and should be compensated as such. And so I think that's, we're going to see a wave of litigation that is, you know, it all goes back to intellectual property. Like, what is intellectual property? And the United States Trademark Patent Office is going to have to weigh in on this, on artificial intelligence. I know that, you know, my view of AI is evolving. The more and more I see how advanced the technology is, I watched this documentary, Coded Bias. A fellow MIT alumni from the MIT Media Lab put this documentary together that's on Netflix, and I was really struck at the limitations of AI when it comes to facial recognition technology. But before I watched that documentary, I also was struck at the lack of AI's understanding of just the diasporatic experience. Whether it's image-driven AI or text-driven AI, I see the limitations there. And, you know, to be honest, those limitations made me feel like, you know, I don't think this tool can be a substitute for that cultural competency AI is not able to do that because the software engineers putting it together don't have that cultural competency. So how can you make something have something that you don't have? So what are your thoughts about AI and cultural competency and inclusivity? What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, great question. You know, AI is only as good as the prompts that we give it, at least for now. And so I know in the past I did searches. I'm a professional historian, so I did searches on specific aspects in African history or in African American history, Black history in the United States. And I remember asking it to, you know, write, you know, three paragraphs about the Great Black Migration, which is this, you know, period basically from the turn of the 20th century through, say, 1960, you know, or 70, where 6 million Black Americans moved from the American South to the North or to other places. And it was like, I'm sorry, I don't know enough information about this topic. I can't provide you with an answer. So I then began to teach it how to learn about, you know, the Great Black Migration. So in terms of cultural competency, like, this is one of the great weaknesses of AI, and it's probably going to remain a weakness for a very long time. But it's a byproduct of who's crafting the algorithms and what their assumptions about the world are. But it's also an opportunity for us to get in there, roll our sleeves up and train it to have this cultural competency aspect to it.
But and I think, train it to have cultural competency, do we want it to have cultural competency? Because, you know, one of the fears of AI is that it's going to replace white collar jobs. But if it can't even write about, you know, the Black experience intelligently, that basically leaves open, you know, the writers that are working in that space, you know, some measure of job security. What are your thoughts about that?
I mean, I think eventually writing as we know it is going to largely be done in an automated fashion. It doesn't mean we shouldn't still teach writing. Like, I'm a professional educator. I've taught at every level, K through 12, you know, graduate school, and everything in between. So we're still going to teach writing, but a lot of the written work that will be done will be automated. So that's just a matter of time. I mean, a lot of business owners, I think 44% of business owners in the Forbes survey said that they thought, no, 65%, excuse me, 65% said that they believe AI and ChatGPT specifically will improve the quality of writing that their company produces. So that's telling. Like, if in the business sector on it like that, then hey, we probably got to roll our sleeves up and start training it. You know, so it's something really seriously to consider. Now, you know, AI companies and tech sector companies already have a serious problem with not a lot of Black and brown and Asian people, more Asian than, say, Black and brown people who are employed by those companies. Google's got a huge problem with it. Microsoft has a problem with it. Right. And so there aren't a lot of those writers in place anyway.
Right.
Right. So the benefit is the cost benefit analysis. Like, on the benefit side, I can roll up my sleeves from where I am and start training this thing on how I want it to function in a cultural competency framework. And on the other hand, you know, the writing's not going to happen organically through those platforms. And we also know that there's, you know, Google was very deeply concerned about some of the, I'll just be blunt, like some of the racist, white supremacist assumptions that were being produced by its first, you know, its first efforts with Bard. And then they felt more pressure to launch after ChatGPT took the whole sector by storm.
Right.
And, you know,
Google has been in the news for a lot of their internal tension around AI. There's been a lot of ethical debates around AI at Google and so much more. And, you know, Google's approach to artificial intelligence is multifaceted. You have your you know, when it comes to SEO, you have your algorithm, which the search algorithm, which has had many updates from Penguin to Panda to Hummingbird to the latent semantic index update, and the more recent within the last few years, the mobile first index update of the algorithm. And so we already know that, you know, Google is using artificial intelligence to manage one of the biggest ad exchanges in the world. And now when you talk about the production of knowledge and the synthesis of information, what are your thoughts about, you know, how, what type of role Google is playing in terms of truth and fact online with artificial intelligence?
Well, you know, I mean, it's tough because one of the biggest sectors that's growing every day like a weed at Google is, you know, YouTube. So, I mean, literally, you know, I forget what the exact statistic is, but
yeah,
you know,
hundreds of number of hours added every day.
Yeah, every day. Right. So, and, you know, I guess there's kind of two directions, you know, to go in for Google. One is it could potentially use AI to police those platforms and moderate some of the video content that's added to the platform, simply because now there are transcripts that accompany all of the videos, right? So that can be crawled and that can be used to then identify disinformation and have that removed from the platform on autopilot. That's one potential way to look at it, you know? And I'm looking it up right now. I just wanted to see, you know, how many YouTube videos uploaded daily, you know, by hours. And it says, wow, yeah, there's 30,000 hours of video uploaded every day. Every hour. And 720,000 hours are uploaded every day to YouTube. So, you know, that's more than a human being, army of people could actually watch and then flag. And so it's you know, because almost all of the videos involve speaking of some kind, of course, AI will probably be utilized for that. And to be honest, there are First Amendment concerns related to the Constitution, right? Around what does free speech look like? You know, who can upload what? We've got January 6th. You know, COVID-19, these two things kind of colliding and people presenting lots of non-authoritative information. And actually, YouTube was one of the first platforms to start flagging content with a trailer that says this content is not accurate. Right. And so it would try to direct people to other types of content, or they would pull content down altogether that, you know, wasn't vetted in some way. So that's this question of truth. Like it's a big deal, but also cultural competency and awareness is a part of how some communities determine truth. So like for certain subjects, not for everything, but for some subjects. So a culture may have an internal knowledge of what makes a thing true. And that may not necessarily be digitized in some form and discoverable by an AI or an algorithm. So these raise lots of questions around cultural competency. And, you know, at the same time, like, it's not like Google doesn't have auto, you know, global translation projects. Of course, Amazon has projects like this, too, with AWS, where, you know, there are now devices that I actually used the Google app when I was in South Korea a few months ago. I could hold it up to any restaurant sign in Korean and it would translate it into English almost instantaneously, and I could choose what I wanted to eat without speaking Korean. Right? So these translation projects are massive, and there are lots of languages on the planet. Eventually a platform like Google will get, or Amazon AWS will get to, that they might not get to now. Like there are African languages, there are 2,000 African languages. You know, only the major ones have been digitized for these translation services. So These are massive, massive projects, and cultural competency and language translation are fused together, right? So those are going to be important ways that certain languages get preserved and cultural practices and others don't.
Yeah, yeah, that, I mean, that's huge. So my next question is more directly about search engine optimization. What role do you see AI having in SEO?
I mean, I suspect that people are working on real-time updating to tags on websites so that they can move traffic flows to accommodate particular products that are on offer on websites, right? So you think about it for a minute. You have, you know, a title tag, a head tag, you know, an alt tag for your images on your web pages, whether they're mobile or not. But at some point, there's going to be that process might be automatable, and you might be able to set targets for it so that if you wanted to slingshot off of the traffic of a major, you know, website, like, I don't know, like a target.com, for instance, and you have similar products, you might be able to utilize AI in real time to change that information based on what the search histories are from those major sites, because it's an open source web, right? So that's a possibility that I think is, I'm sure people are looking at this already. And that's
Yeah, I mean, I've been seeing, you know, people building tools. A lot of people are leveraging the API that's available on ChatGPT to build all types of software and tools. It's been really, really interesting to see the evolution of the landscape. And I definitely agree with you. You know, companies have to get on board. So what would you recommend for a company to where to start with their AI tool consideration process?
I mean, I think, well, like obviously the two of us have created a response, which is just an entry-level training platform for small business owners around, you know, learning how AI is valuable, how to write your initial prompts, et cetera. But I think it's important to just have a consultant look over your business to figure out where AI may create the greatest bang for the buck, at least so you have a starting point. Like, every business is different. I mean, you know, you've worked with in search engine optimization with many different types of companies. There are, you know, local services companies that need to be much more visible on the mobile web, of course, and online, period, in their local area. Right. There's a specific way to do that, right? And then there are companies, there are e-commerce companies that we know Black business owners, small business owners have, and their needs are different. Their needs revolve around what historically has been their major seller, what are their major sellers, but also, like, how do they get more visibility for some of the pages that historically haven't been seen as often or people are less interested in? And then, you know, if they're on the Amazon platform, there's linkages between these spaces. So I would say just definitely having someone give your business the initial once over around AI is really important. It's important to just have a consultancy strategy call, because if you don't have that, you really don't know which direction your business can potentially go in. And you don't want to be left having to make a lot of decisions all at once.
Right.
So if you're strategic about it, have somebody look over your company and what you do and have them suggest, here's a strategic plan for AI for your small business. And this is important. If you choose a consultant, they need to tell you why they think it's important for you to take certain steps first, second, and third, not just to give you a plan, right? So then at least you can say, okay, this makes sense to me based on the type of business that I have. And here are ways we can get increased visibility. Like, I think a lot of people don't realize AI allows you to build a massive, we talked about this at the conference, a massive content archive of digitally crafted images, but text as well, and video scripts, podcast scripts, things are powerful for you, because once you have a massive archive like that, you stop fretting over the day-to-day. What am I going to post today? What am I going to post next week? Like, this is a real concern for small business owners. But now you can have an archive that has a year's worth of content in it. The beauty of that is you then turn around and train someone on your staff around AI acquisition, and they get you even farther ahead. So now the archive has 2 years of content in it, or 6 months instead of 2 months, so that you create some breathing room for you to learn, because this change is happening so quickly. Someone in your business needs to be dedicated to just looking at AI and its implications, and then implementing stuff inside your business that's related to AI. Those are huge lost opportunities, because we can say your competitors are doing it. If they're more well-resourced than you, the beauty of AI right now is the cost is extremely low to participate in AI.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. There are, regardless if it's accounting, software development, writing, content, the applications, images, art,
music, social media posts.
Right. I mean, the applications are endless. Employee manuals. I mean, just anything that can take place on a screen.
That's right.
AI can achieve it at a certain level, may not be the highest level, but it can create it. And the question now becomes, is that good enough for the business in question? And so I really think now is really a watershed moment in the life of technology. I believe Moore's Law has expired, or Moore's Law is no longer a thing. And, it's really, a whole new era we are in of technology. And so on the SEO Queen Tech Show, we definitely want to encourage you to consider using AI and making sure you don't put your head in the sand about these technological innovations, because companies are implementing them at a rapid pace and seeing benefits to their bottom line. So how can people connect with you, Dr. John, to learn more?
Yeah, I mean, I know the two of us have a training platform, AIforsmallbusiness.com. If I remember correctly, that's the domain name. And that's always possible. It can also reach me at drjohnsprojects@gmail.com. It can always reach me there. If you're curious to have someone explore what AI might mean for your company, like there's plenty of time availability to do that. But, companies are getting smart really quickly. I mean, and no one knows what's going to happen with the AI environment. If for some reason laws get handed down that limit the intellectual property rights of AI, and you already have a 5-year content archive, you're straight. You beat the spread. But if you wait, and you could have a 5 years worth of content sitting on a drive that you've already developed, and you can just drip feed that onto the internet over time, you're in a much stronger position. So those are things to do. But also, just reach out to Z. I don't have to tell them for you, but, obviously she's, one of the people who's positioned with, her background from MIT to help companies evaluate this at a very high level. And that's important. And we work together on projects, so there's always a possibility you might get both of us.
Absolutely. So I want to thank you, Dr. John, for coming on to the SEO Queen Tech Show. The SEO Queen Tech Show is a podcast to help you get more credibility, visibility, and profitability through inspiration, technology, and marketing insight. This podcast is for professionals and entrepreneurs who are looking to get more customers, clients, and patients. We're broadcast worldwide on Bishani Radio, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. Bishani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. You can listen to the SEO Queen Tech Show on any mobile phone or tablet device. Also, as a thank you gift for listening, you can always go to SEOQueen.com and book a complimentary strategy session. Just go to SEOQueen.com and book a Reach More Clients Power session. If you go to SEOQueen.com and scroll down, there is a link to AI trainings for smallbusiness.com. That's AI trainings for smallbusiness.com. That's another way that you can connect with our AI mastermind. And thank you so much. And until next time.
Thanks for having me.
It's time to grow with the SEO Queen. Get visibility like never before. And traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow with the SEO Queen. Receive the perfect leads like never before. And traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.